Welcome to Legacy Heating and Air Game Day, only on the home of Notre Dame football. Sports Radio 960 WSBT and WSBTRadio.com.
Brought to you by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Sherwood Tire, Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, Pet Refuge, Centier Bank, Tim Growl State Farm Insurance, Michelob Ultra, OSMC, Imperial Furniture, Lozier, Pella Windows, and Hotel Elkhart.
Oh, there's people dancing all over Eddy Street Commons, across from Five Guys. It's like a scene out of The Wizard of Oz, Jim.
Is it more dancing, just trying to, or are they being picked up by the wind?
Picked up by the wind.
And just trying desperately to hang on to something.
I'm waiting for the witch on the bike to go flying by.
I am too. There.
This is a Legacy Heat and Air Game Day show. Good afternoon. There you go. You got it down. No matter what, we're here. The tent is weighted down with big concrete weights. During breaks, Jim's going to lift those for some exercise.
Right.
And our first guest, when we get to Bob in a little bit, looks like he still lifts some weights. Anyway, we're here. We're your little ray of sunshine as we get ready for your Fighting Irish to prepare to take on and upset the number four Clemson Tigers tonight at the house that Rockne built. Again, I'm Tim Growl, Jim Irizarry, and we thank Matt Embry back in the studio and Bob, our engineer, Bob Henning. He's here somewhere. Anyway, we are across from Eddy Street Commons, right across from Five Guys. You know, the wind's so bad we don't even get the burger smell today.
No. We don't. I just noticed that now.
We're at
it's
the
blowing everything back.
That's right. We're at the center of Eddy Street Commons in the west entrance to the parking garage. Please stop on by and see us and get some pictures with the guests or autographs. We're going to be joined today by former Notre Dame players Bob Morton, Bill Gallagher, and Mike Haywood. And Mike was also an offensive coordinator at Notre Dame under Charlie Weiss. And let's not forget the one, the only, Rudy, the original, will join us here in about 25 minutes. So come on out, or keep you
or is,
dial set and listen.
Or as I described him yesterday on Leprechaun Lunch, just some guy who had a movie made about him.
It is funny. It was pretty windy out here, but it did not get severely windy until almost right on the button.
Right smack dab 2 o'clock.
All right. First impressions. You've been talking a lot all week on your show and stuff about the Irish. You know, got a fighting chance?
If the running game gets going early, if they get off to a fast start, if they get off to a start like they did against Syracuse, mm-hmm. you know, where, I mean, it'd right. be great if they could repeat that performance, you know, of a pick six on the first play back.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if they can get off to a fast start, hold Clemson to a couple of three and outs, you know, to start, and then while you're doing that, also put points up for yourself, they're beatable.
Absolutely.
You know, like Syracuse kind of cracked the code a little bit, you know, a couple of weeks ago against Clemson. So, you know, except for, you know, that whole fourth quarter thing.
Sure.
But three quarters of the game, you know, just kind of do what Syracuse did, really.
Well,
you know, get off to that fast start,
yep.
hold them to, you know, get turnovers. If the running game gets going, even better.
Keep them off the field.
Yeah.
Use the time. It's going to be windy out there. I'm not sure how it's going to affect. That wind's coming out of the southeast. So the wind might be with the kicker from the south and going towards touchdown Jesus and going to the south. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Here's a guy had a lot of tough games, practices, and he's in a tough job now for working for Notre Dame. So former Notre Dame player Bob Morton. Good afternoon. I almost said good morning again.
Listen, when we have a 2:30 game most weeks, right? Like this
right.
is morning time.
Right.
So I'll go ahead and let you guys sleep in a little bit for these 7:30 games. Like, good morning to you guys.
I didn't wake up till 11 this morning.
Hey, Bob, let's start with, and we'll go backwards. What are you doing now with the university?
Yeah, so I came back to the university 4.5 years ago when I graduated in 2006. I spent 12 years in the evangelical church, got my master's degree in theology, worked south side of Fort Wayne. the school district that had 32 first languages spoken, and then came back to the church in Granger that I actually attended when I was at Notre Dame. 4.5 years ago, after a burger and a beer with a dear friend of mine, had an opportunity to come back into the development office, and now my primary responsibility is to try and increase financial aid gifts to the university. Higher education is more expensive now than it's ever been,
right.
And Notre Dame is really trying to stem the increase in tuition,
okay.
where other universities get more and more expensive.
Sure do.
Notre Dame is just trying to make sure that our pace in that is slower than the rest of the nation, and that's what I'm here for.
Do you use your physical stature at all to get some financial gifts? Does that benefit at all?
Yeah, like sometimes I just have to stand over somebody and intimidate a gift. No, it's not that. My goal is to whoever I work with, make sure that they know they've got a guy on campus, right? So
sure.
if they have a son or daughter that needs to take a tour of campus, if they're wondering, like, hey, can I get a parking pass instead of in this lot, in that lot? Heaven forbid they have a student here who's sick and they just want somebody to drop off chicken noodle soup.
Right.
Like, I really want to be kind of all things to all people that I work with.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
And then the giving, the philanthropy is really, it stems out of that relationship.
How many good ideas and deals are conceived over a burger and a brew?
Listen, I'll tell you what, man.
It's my favorite way of doing business. I'll say that.
That's it. All good ideas happen that way.
All right, now we'll go back from the beginning, which we like to do. We like to hear how people got started. High school, did you play multiple positions on the offensive line in high school like you ended up and did at Notre Dame?
I mean, yes and no, right? So, I mean, I was 6'4", 275 as a freshman. I was a hockey player. I'd moved from Boston to Texas. And
I'm sorry, you were a hockey player?
I was a hockey player.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to check from him.
Holy
no,
cow.
You wouldn't. You wouldn't. I'll tell you that right now. And so, I mean, you move from Boston down to Dallas, Texas, and there's not like a whole lot of hockey rinks and a whole lot of
sure.
hockey teams there. And so the athletic director was like, I will tell you where the hockey rink is if you come out for football practice. And 2 years later, I was one of, two or three sophomores starting on varsity. I was starting at left tackle. And back in the day, centers, were 6'1", 6'2", mm-hmm. often 255, maybe the smallest guys in the O-line.
Yeah.
And, my offensive line coach in high school, Travis Smith, was just phenomenal and just really a forward thinker for a high school coach. Said, hey, I want to move you inside. You're the most experienced guy we're going to have. I want you calling the plays. I want you working with the quarterback. And he brought me inside, and I was fortunate after three years of varsity football in Texas to be the number one center rated in the country, committed here in a really tumultuous time. Where was my coach Bob Davey? Was it George O'Leary? Was it Ty Willingham?
Oh man.
Listen,
you
I was coming
right
to,
in there.
Yeah.
Right.
I was coming to Notre Dame no matter what, and I tried to keep that class together as best I could. And got here in the summer before my freshman year, and the rest has been history.
We're on the Legacy Heating Air Game Day Show on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We're talking with former Irish offensive lineman Bob Morton. Who did recruit you then from the university, since we're not sure who was the coach?
Yeah, actually, the only person that survived all three of those head coaches was Greg Madison. He was a defensive line,
great defensive line coach,
maybe at the time the best recruiter in the country.
Yes.
And so the awkward thing was the recruiter for me at Stanford, which is where Ty Willingham was our running back coach by the name of Buzz Preston. And so I had to tell him, I had to say, Coach Preston, like, I love what Stanford offers. I'm just not a California guy. Like, it's not for me. And so then I show up to Notre Dame, and as much as Greg Madison wanted to be the one to meet me on campus, Buzz Preston shows up and was all like, hey, you thought you could get rid of me.
Oh,
and
man.
So we had a good old time. Great, great man. Still in touch with both of them to this day.
So you were with the Irish from 2003 to 2006?
02 to 06. Yeah, I came in. I redshirted that first year. There was a guy by the name of Jeff Fain, who was the center before me. I decided to be nice and let him keep his position.
Yeah.
If you don't know, Jeff Fain was all world, right, as an offensive lineman. So
that's why I asked you about whether you played multiple positions there, because I do know you played center, and then you graciously, and part of the team, you gave it up to go to left.
Yeah, really, that's a thing that I think I've really carried into just my adult and professional life as well. I hope everybody's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Got a fire truck right down here on Eddy Street. So
this is live radio.
It is.
Yeah. Right.
So it was after my freshman year, sophomore year. John Sullivan, who just retired a couple years ago, had an amazing NFL career. Came in the year after me, and we needed somebody at I think it was left guard, and so I shifted over, and he came in and played center. Charlie Weiss comes in the next year, wants me to play center again. And so we just had this kind of like musical chairs on the offensive line. We considered ourselves for a couple years as having six starters. And so it was just a matter of, I could do all of those things. Why wouldn't I do that to get the best five on the field?
Sure.
And so having that opportunity to do that, some of the best days of my life with guys that to this day may not really know how important they are to just my development as a human being. And yeah, still something I'm really, really proud to have done.
So not all offensive linemen can do that. Tell me the technical about changing from center to left guard. Stance for one, right?
I mean, not everybody can switch from right to a left-handed stance. Like, it is a little bit different for whatever reason. Like, I was a better offensive lineman in a left-handed stance. Like, I couldn't just go move over and play right guard right away.
Right.
Like, there was something in my head. And so getting in the left-handed stance, I did things technically a little bit better. But the big thing for me was the timing. When you're a center, you're snapping and you're hitting with your offhand often at the same time, instantaneously. There's a nose guard right on you trying to disrupt the play. When you're a guard, you've got an opportunity to get 2 feet in the ground before anybody touches you. It's even more so as a tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And so moving anywhere else on the line, it seems like it would be really easy, but you're expecting to get hit right away.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you've got time to reach that outside technique, to maybe pull even. And those are things that I had to work an entire spring practice and off season to really get comfortable and be natural at.
Was that something that as you developed that skill, as you practice it more and more, that it's almost like time slows down? Like everything that you see just takes that extra second or so to develop.
Yeah, it was super interesting. So I was a center, and then we'd be rotating and get another center in there, and I would sit there next to Coach McDonnell, who was my offensive line coach, and say, hey, Coach, like, we're down a left guard. Like, rather than bring in somebody who's not ready or may not play in a game, if I have to be game ready, like, let me go practice at left guard. And so I'd pull around, and I'd be so thinking about every step that I was technically sound, and then all of a sudden I'd get hit in the back by a running back, right? Because I wasn't fast enough into the hole.
Okay.
Listen, I've never been hit hard. Well, that's not true. Matthias Kiwanuka from Boston College took my soul one day. But outside of that soul leaving my body moment, the hardest I've ever been hit was Julius Jones hitting me early in a practice one day and saying, get out of my gap, right? And and it was like him teaching me like what I thought to expect from a running back.
Right.
We were about to step up in our running game. And so I needed to learn what it was like to not just pull and be technically sound, but to speed that up. And so thankfully, as time went on, the game slowed down. I sped up. I mean, not that much faster than normal. I'm not a speed demon by any means.
Tim and Jim with former Notre Dame center, then turned left guard Bob Morton on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. So here's some of the names of your buddies that you played with, and Irish fans all know about it. Chris Stewart, Dan Santucci, Sam Young, Ryan Harris, John Carlson, Eric Olson, and then behind you were Brady Quinn, Travis Thomas, Darius Walker. A lot of names that everybody...
Yeah, I with all due respect, I feel like I need to correct you. You misspoke, Tim, when you said that I played with them. I like to lovingly say those gentlemen played with me. So no, it's just as an offensive lineman, you don't get a whole lot of shine. But I'm on the radio and they're not right now, so I'm going to go ahead and take it while I can get it.
And I will gladly accept somebody changing the way I read it. So I'm right with you, man. I'm right with you. Hey, so one of the things you participated in was the Bush Push game.
Yes, thanks for that reminder.
Where were you when the offense was on the sidelines and they were hit that long pass? Because I was in the stadium, unfortunately. Thought we won too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was like everybody else was starting to go down, but no. But
yeah, I'll say this. Like, I think that we all had some semblance of feeling like we've got this, we won this, right? It's over. But there was also something about there was a mystique about Reggie Bush that year that.
Yeah.
You realize that if there was 1 second on the clock and he had the ball in his hands, it might take not just the 11 guys on the field, but the 100 guys you got on the sideline to bring this guy down.
Yeah.
And so there was an unsettled feeling in the pit of my stomach. And then when that fourth down hit Dwayne Jarrett, I think it was, that took it down inside the 10, it was just like there's a lot of words that I'm not going to put on the radio. But
sure.
I cannot,
appreciate that.
I cannot. I just could not believe that we were in that space. And then, you have what I thought was a genuine mistake, on the Leinart fumble where they gave him forward progress,
right.
But then they also stopped the clock. So either They've got to let the ball go out of bounds
Right?
stop the clock.
Yeah.
Which would have been the 3-yard line. I still like Rich push on a sweep to the right to get in. Or it's forward progress and the clock stops. So there was a mistake in there. But, I mean, it's still – I had the opportunity to play in that game. It was amazing to come back. It was amazing to play the way that we did. Just really unfortunate that we have to be remembered as the team that didn't come out on top.
Tell us about playing or in the huddle with a guy of stature, Brady Quinn. Not just that game, but all the games that you guys were in.
Anytime you're with somebody that pretty, man, you just realize that you're not. You know what I mean? No,
you need to get on this side. I'll take it off. I'll go sit over there.
No, I think – You know, I haven't chatted with Brady a whole lot in years since, but really, like, I felt like I knew him as a football player really well. Like, my desire was to know not just what I needed to do on every play, but really the X's and O's of what everyone was going to do. And so I felt privy to, like, what was going on in his head as he was making certain plays. And what I loved about it was, in my head, I would know, okay, we're going to go ahead and hit Smarge on this slant, or we're going to block run, but he's going to throw it to Stovall over there on the left. And there would be times that he would do something that I wasn't ready for, and those were the plays that made you say, wow, right? Wow. And so, you know, that's what it's like playing with somebody like that. When somebody goes off script and sucks, that's normal. When somebody can go off script and surprise their O-line and shock the world that way, that's pretty fun to be a part of. And so it was just an honor for me to be on the same team as somebody of that caliber.
So, Bob Martin, tell us about this year's Irish. First off, how they've developed from the first game till now, and then we'll talk about what you think has to be done today.
Yeah, I think in terms of development, it's been really interesting, right? Like, you have to remember, as exciting as it was when Marcus Freeman was announced, first-year coach, first-year freed up, without Brian Kelly, offensive coordinator, first year system on defense for like the third time.
First year head coach assistants.
Yeah. And so you've got a lot of things that I don't want to say we're stacked against, but we're obstacles for this team that I don't know that they handled super well at the beginning. You have your best offensive lineman, arguably, at least the one you expected to be, playing a new position. You've got different people who haven't played up there. And so this expectation that we were going to be a run-dominant team didn't play out early. I don't think the play calling for a mobile quarterback was really successful early.
Yeah.
And it hurt Tyler Buckner physically, and I think it hurt our team. Mm-hmm. The thing I'll say in terms of development is we've seen over the course of the season there's something special when we're able to use two out of the three running backs that we have on the field.
Right.
I've been begging anyone who would listen to put 7 and 3 on the field at the same time, not because I think they're inherently the two best backs. Mm-hmm. I think they complement each other so well. And when we came out in an I formation and handed to Baby Bus, Estime up the middle, 3.5 yards in a cloud of those rubber pellets, man, and I'm a happy camper.
Right.
I think last week, Tim, Tommy Reese called the first game that I thought was a great game plan and execution, and if we made a couple of adjustments coming out of halftime, it's his first perfect game as an offensive coordinator.
You talk about the running them both at the same time, the I formation. Does anybody even use the I formation anywhere before?
Well, before.
Or now, yeah.
People do it unsuccessfully, right? Like, there's no real room for just a true fullback anymore. But if you look back to when I played, I had a guy that I played with, number 16, Rashawn Powers Neal. And he was arguably our best running back, even when Darius was on our team.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy that could get us 4 to 5 yards, even when I didn't block anybody, right? And that's who Estime has reminded me of. And so if he can just put a hat on a hat and take up a blocker, we don't need him to be a dominant fullback. We don't need another Mark Edwards, right? What we need is somebody who can get those 4 yards when we need it and provide the extra time in the backfield that Logan Diggs needs to be special. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't see the I formation a whole lot, other than you see the modified pistol with the fullback to the right or the left and then the tailback behind.
We're going to have the last guest of the show is Bill Gallagher, and he played back in the days where there really were fullbacks.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right.
And they called them like left halfback and right halfback and fullbacks and stuff too.
Back when the term fullback actually meant something.
Right, exactly.
Are you a score predictor?
I'm not a score. I'll predict the score for you. I mean, you're the host. So if you tell me to predict the score, I'll
I'm not going to tell you. I'll ask you if you'd like to predict the score. you're too big for me to tell you to do anything.
This is where that physical stature thing comes in.
You know what? I'll go ahead and defer for you said Mike Haywood was coming on a little bit later,
yeah,
right? So
right.
Mike will probably say that somebody's going to stomp a mud hole in somebody else, if I remember back from when he was coordinating. But I'll go ahead and let Haywood predict the score. I think that you guys have kind of hit the nail on the head with the possibility. I think this is an uphill sledding kind of game for Notre Dame. What really hurt us coming out of half was whenever they stacked the box, we didn't run the ball well. Whenever third down hit, they dropped 7 or 8, and Pine wasn't accurate with his throws to really get off, you know, get continued on third down. Clemson's the kind of team that can really stop a running game with 4 and drop 7 the entire game. I don't like our chances if we don't run the ball well. I think if we have to throw the ball in this kind of wind against that defense, it's not going to be pretty. And the orange faithful that are flooding these streets right now are going to be pretty loud in the game. That being said, I thought Syracuse had a leg up on us because they were the grittier team, and we came out and showed that we were tougher than Syracuse. Syracuse out-toughed Clemson two weeks ago.
Yeah. Right.
Now we need to go ahead and think of ourselves as the bully and bully Clemson today.
All right. Sounds like a plan to me, Jim. What do you think?
I'm sold.
All right. Bob Morton, thank you for taking your time with us today. We really appreciate it. And we'll catch you. I already prepped you that I'm going to be contacting you about some of your other player friends. So
absolutely. All those guys that played with me.
There you go. You got it. Thanks a lot. Stay
thanks,
right
guys.
With us.
Yep.
We're on Sports Radio 960 WSBT, your home for the Fighting Irish. We're back with Rudy. Oh, and it is start of the rain out here, but we don't care.
We're covered.
That's right. Huh. We're just like football players. We tough it out.
That's right.
Right?
Until the wind takes the tent. Then
yeah,
then we're scurrying
right.
into, yeah. what did into I, Brew what, Burger or Five Guys or wherever. Yeah.
What did I say if the tent goes flying?
I guess just
the show
keep
goes
it going.
On.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we do have 175 feet of cord, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's
true. We can take this show anywhere.
Oh, boy, that's tempting now, man. A beer right now. Okay.
Right?
Anyway, we're in the center of the old Eddie Commons. Eddie Commons, of course, has now grown much larger. We were at the south end of it a couple weeks ago at the Credit Union 1 grand opening. But we're across from Five Guys. Our tent set up in the west entrance to the Eddie Street Commons parking garage. So come on out. We know there's a lot of people out here because we see them walking all over the place.
Seeing a lot of orange, too.
That's right. That's right.
Let's get some more green out here, huh?
Let's get caught up with one of the show's favorite guests, and I always get people talking about having him on the show, but he's in town. We're going to find out what for. The original, the one, the only, Rudy. Good afternoon.
There's a lot of Rudys here.
No.
There's get out of here.
Not on here. You know, maybe go to Clemson or wherever their city is, but not in South Bend or anywhere around here. Hey, man, what are you in town for? And thank you for taking the time to get over here.
I'm happy to be here, and I'm here for a book signing. Mm-hmm. Then watch the game and go from there.
So how often are you back in?
Once a year.
Once a year? All right. And I'm sure that you've got people, you got to do all sorts of stuff going on, I bet.
Yeah, we have a speaking engagements and autograph signings and my partner here, the Cheese Man. We have a cheese company with Green Bay, Wisconsin, believe it or not.
Really?
I mean,
yeah.
If you're going to have a cheese company.
We do. I mean, we're very excited about it.
Oh, my God. I'm a cheese and cracker guy myself all the time. So where is that at? Is that
Green Bay.
No, online? I mean, can you order stuff online or anything or not?
We do a lot of buying, selling, and developing.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
That's
okay.
The difference.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I am. I'm the king of the cheese, man. I love
yeah.
cheese. So, Rudy, let's first talk about, because you watch the games?
I do, and they're encouraging at times and interesting at times. I don't understand why we can't be better at home.
I don't get it. I know. It's
where does the
counterintuitive.
Team do they leave, or where are they at?
Right.
Well, I know a couple of bouncers and stuff that work the bars around town. They don't see the players, so they're not at the bars anymore.
Right,
like
right,
that stuff
right.
too. How are you as a fan watching a game? Do you have to watch it critically from like where your position was, or are you able to watch the
I'm
whole game?
I'm not a critical guy. I'm a moment guy because we all make mistakes. We all miss certain moments. And when good moments happen, I'm happy. Bad moments happen, we can get better. I always look at that because, hey, listen – you have another shot of getting it, and that's how I look at it. So I'm not a critical guy. I'm not one of those guys that, why didn't he do that? And I look at, he'll be better, and hopefully he gets better.
So take us a little bit. I know we've talked before, and I don't want to keep beating story to death or anything. Short version of coming out of the Chicago area and into South Bend, and then I want to get into more of what you're doing nowadays. And
sure.
Stuff, but let's just go there.
No, I think the short version is blue collar, working a coal plant. Ended up going in the Navy, coming back from the Navy.
Can I stop you real there?
Sure.
Was that in the movie? Because I don't remember that. I was prepping and I saw that and I thought, what?
We took it out of the movie because it wasn't important.
Gotcha.
It's not a documentary. It's more the spirit of the truth for the movie. So what we want to do with the movie, deliver a message of dreams, and you have to have a real purpose for the dream. You got to do it something not just for you, but for someone else, like your family, your father, your brothers, and that's what makes it go. So we want to develop that line of thought, and it worked. And it still works today in a big way.
Does.
Not only at Notre Dame, but across this country, even international, we're big. So I'm really proud that we did that. We developed a great message. And people, it's not a football movie, not a Catholicism movie, not a Notre Dame. It's a movie about life. And that's what we're excited about.
I think that's why it resonates
long.
Oh,
absolutely
it does.
Were you on the set every day?
Yeah, well, I put the movie together.
Okay.
Put the team together. Because
right.
if you're going to do a movie, you don't walk into Hollywood and say, hey, make my movie.
Right.
And they don't knock on your door and say, make my movie. So you had to do a lot of research and development, how movies are put together. So there's a team. There's a team of people. You have to find out what they do, how they do it. Go out and talk to them and put it together. And then find out people that put movies together like you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rocky or like Hoosiers,
right.
like Field of Dreams. And I found a guy from Hoosiers from here right at the Jameson Inn whose brother helped put Hoosiers together.
Oh, wow.
I ended up meeting him, and he ended up introducing me to the writer, and the writer turned me down and at first, but you go back at it again and again 2 years later, this is funny, a guy from Michigan State, the president of Columbia Pictures, wants a sports movie, and he calls up the guy who was working at Orion Pictures with the guys who did Hoosiers, gave him a two-picture deal, was a sports movie and a comic relief movie, and thank God I went to Hollywood, Santa Monica that day, from the advice of my friend here from South Bend, Donnie Strategus, met Johnny Strategus. Went out there to meet Angela. Angela stands me up. So I go find a mailman to get me to Angela's house. Because I knocked on his door, because of all that resonated with the guy when he called in the guys who did Hoosiers, that little moment resonated. Yeah, we do have a story about this kid who wanted to do a movie for his father, wanted to go to Notre Dame for his father, and he's an underdog. He said, write it. Can't wait to see it. I applied to Notre Dame. I got turned down. He said, write that movie. So, plus he was a walk-on at Michigan State. So it all worked. We get everything done.
Yeah.
Notre Dame really did not want this movie to go, but we ended up inspiring them to do it, and they ended up doing it, which was wonderful, and it turned out great.
This is the Legacy Heating Air Game Day Show on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We're with Rudy. Sorry, I just have to do that. I've always done that. Were you involved in the casting? Did you pick out Ned and Sean?
Well, no. Sean Astin, I found. He was in a movie, Goonies, many years ago.
Yes, oh, yeah.
Then he was in a movie, Memphis Belle. When we were casting for the movie, my dad was a turret gunner on a B-17, so we're Sean. So that resonated, and he started playing like Sandlot football with his, I said, that's him. He had one of those spirits about him, naive, gullible, vulnerable, all the characteristics, that's him. So we decided on him. I casted Jason Miller, got him involved. He played Era, and I got two good casts out of it.
You did. Right? You did a great job.
And Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn, we got out of Second City out of Chicago.
Yeah.
And their first movie was Rudy, and they met a producer on our set by the name of Kerry Woods, who helped them get Swingers made and done, and the rest is history for those guys.
What about the football scenes where they were actually tackling and stuff?
Yeah, we shot. We brought the NFL films in to film it because Oliver Wood, wonderful cinematographer, he just couldn't get comfortable with shooting. So we asked him with the NFL films, would you have any problems? And by the way, when you ask a cinematographer to shoot a movie, it's a hard – but he was – we're a team. He was a team player. He says, yeah. So we called Steve Saban up. And he had his crew here the next day, and that's how we shot football.
Wow.
So take us to that opening at the Palais Royal in South Bend.
Yeah, the Palais. Well,
that's what my parents and my grandparents used to go there and dance and stuff many years back. So that's how I know the place downtown.
Oh, wow, that's unbelievable.
And I'm born and raised in South Bend, so I went there, too.
Yeah, that's a great moment. We had over 10,000 people there.
Yes.
It was wonderful. The other thing, we took Corby's, the old –
the original
old biker's bar.
Yeah.
We turned it into Corby's, and that became a hot spot. So, and we shot 90% of the movie right here in South Bend, in the little neighborhoods and all that. So we were very, South Bend, we were excited about shooting here. Mm-hmm. And we did it in 30 days.
That's all?
Yeah, that's
wow.
it.
Wow.
But the post-production is what takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, put, yeah, moving
the
all
music,
the video.
The music, Jerry Goldsmith, yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
And wow. then did you have any part of the marketing of the movie then?
Well, it takes care of itself.
Okay.
Notre Dame got on board and started promoting it, but it went outside of Notre Dame real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And internationally it got strong. And it really got strong. It's amazing how movies take a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know until you put it out there. And when it took off, it took off. Box office wasn't that big, but it took off streaming, video, domestic, and, you know, foreign films. I mean, we were very excited. And the film actually inspired a lot of other great athletes, like a Kobe Bryant, who saw the movie when he was 16 years old, inspired him to work hard, have a good work ethic, and get better each day. And he compliments that to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When he was interviewed at USC, he said, the film, Rudy, was very important for me. So you think about why you made the film. It was for guys who needed it,
right.
and for people who needed hope,
mm-hmm.
and that's why we made it.
For my life, the Hoosiers and Rudy are my two times.
Made
here in, all about Indiana stories, too.
Rocky, too, man. That's
yeah. Oh, yeah. man, yeah.
That's yeah. Rocky. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the one that really got me going.
yeah.
When I saw Rocky. But there was a guy from the Chicago Tribune after the football game came up to me, Bill Glee. I'll never forget this. He said, who are you? Everyone's chanting. It's a student body chant.
Yeah.
I won the bingo bouts, and they remembered that.
Uh-huh.
So whatever starts in the student body kind of resonates through the stadium. He says, I never saw anything like this. People chant the guy's name, they don't even know. I said, well, they know me, but the other people don't know you. They don't even know who you are. I said, I know. He says, this only happens in Hollywood. Bingo. That was a seed.
So you were in the bingo bouts, too.
I won the bingo bouts.
That's a big deal.
Yeah,
for,
yeah. Nappy was our coach at the time. And, and yeah, I won the bingo bout. Runner-up my junior, senior year, I won it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do they even do that anymore?
Yeah, they do.
You just don't hear as much about it around here anyway.
They stream and they have the girls boxing now too.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm behind the times.
Yeah,
the
times. Me too.
Hey, so as inspirational as that movie was, then you became a motivational speaker.
A storyteller.
Okay.
There's a big difference between a motivational speaker and a storyteller.
Got
motivational speakers will give you the A, B, C, D.
You need to tell Wikipedia. Yeah. Don't put a bad
half of that stuff's not even true on Wikipedia. I don't know who writes it up. They got my birthday wrong. A lot of things wrong. But the point is, storytelling connects with people.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. We tell a good story that inspires them with good messages.
Tim Growl, Jim Irizarry, we're on Sports Radio 960 WSBT with Rudy. So your travels took you to the White House. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I met four presidents, had dinner at the White House, showed the movie in the White House. It was a wonderful moment. You met a president, a lot of great people. First guy I met was John Glenn and his wife.
Oh, wow.
And he brings me in to meet the president, and he has 59 of his friends there. And then we go show the movie.
Which president would that be at that time?
1993. Let me see.
Clinton.
That was Clinton.
I said 1993. That's right.
Yeah.
You're a good presidential guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not just some dumb.
No, I mean, we've read. We've read.
Sometimes these headsets are on too tight on our big heads and everything like that too.
You know, the best one day was with Little George and Big George. They were cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. And I spoke with Obama at a Legions because I'm a veteran and Legionnaires. Deal. So you got to be around some great people.
Right. So you've been doing this for a long time. What has changed about being a speaker from when you started to nowadays?
Knowing how to connect to people, to the audience, have a sense of humor with the audience, make them respond to you. That's the key, knowing how to connect to the audience.
Is that tougher these days?
It takes a little skill to learn, but you learn it and you just be yourself and read energy. That's the key, reading the energy of the people, knowing where to go with a story.
Do you do a lot of corporations?
A lot of corporations and universities as well. And we do a lot of signings.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just came off in Washington, D.C. I'm Tyson, Jerry. I mean, look at Larry Holmes. His wife comes up. Said, Larry, there's Rudy. He said, he owes me $40. She says, no, Larry, that's Rudy, the movie we watched. He says, that's Rudy.
Oh,
that's the response you get.
Yeah.
Then Mike Tyson comes up to me and wants me to take a picture with his daughter because they watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And his son goes to USC. Oh, he's a wonderful, very talented young man. Mm-hmm. He belongs at Juilliard. That's how talented he is.
Wow.
So you meet some interesting people, and you meet people who want to meet you, like Michael Vick wanted to meet you, Mariano Rivera wants to meet you, because they all had to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
They all had to get through their moments. That's what they identify with.
So do you see when you're talking to different sports figures, there's any one sports? I can't think of the word right now.
New York Yankees.
Okay.
They brought me to Yankee Stadium, all right? And here you are, your dream when you were a kid.
Sure.
Yankee Stadium. Here you are.
Oh, yeah.
With the best of the best in the locker room with Joe Girardi. And you're here with all these, and they all want to meet you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then fourth inning, they bring you first base.
Man.
Is that cool?
Jeez,
every three innings they change the bases.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Man.
Then you go in the back and you start doing interviews and you're with the best of the best. That blew me away in Yankee Stadium.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just an iconic.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up, obviously you wanted to go to Notre Dame. When you were at Notre Dame, any favorite rivalries? USC, Michigan?
Well, USC was always a big one.
Mm-hmm.
In Michigan, not really, but USC was the big one.
Yeah, we probably didn't play Michigan then, did we?
USC was big.
Yeah. Do you like what's going on with college ball now?
No.
With the
No.
Let's do one at a time. NIL.
No.
What's your comments about NIL?
Well, first of all, how would you walk in a locker room when you make an X amount of dollars and your other kids aren't?
I agree.
How is that going to react?
I agree.
You know? And what kind of attitude are they going to have at that age making all that money? I mean, it's a little stressful, I would say, later on.
Yeah.
It's going to be a train wreck down the road, even though it looks good now. But wait till that train wreck. It's not going to be pretty. And there's no loyalty with no one.
Yeah.
Coaches, players, I don't like the coach, so I'm leaving.
That's exactly
right.
I hate that.
Yeah, it's
right.
Over.
Right.
So there's no real tradition anymore. What's happening to that?
Yeah.
That's a train wreck I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, transfer portal.
Terrible. Hey, you know, what if Joe Montana would have transferred?
Well, I was just.
And he had every right to transfer.
Right.
But he didn't, did
That's right.
And he stuck it out, and he got his shot. Mm-hmm. Hey, four Super Bowls, national championship. The coach and him didn't get along. It doesn't matter. He's still prepared for his moment.
Right. Yeah.
Like I did.
We've had a number of players this year tell us that, you know, that, I went home crying to my mom. I wanted to leave. No, you're staying
at
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But nowadays, if a coach looks cross-eyed at somebody,
you're going.
They're out of
here. You're leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you believe that?
That's not the
way to raise your kids either.
Yeah.
That's right.
Like, I'm not a parent or anything, but
my daughter
went
to the Boston Conservatory. She's from Vegas. We live in Vegas. And it got cold. She wanted to come home. No, you're not.
It got cold.
You've got to work through this, honey.
Right.
And she did, and she's glad she did it.
Yeah.
So tell everybody, our listeners, how they can get a hold of you to find out maybe where you're going to be. And you're going back there for the bookstore right now.
I'm going to go to the bookstore for a signing. You can go to RudyInternational.com. And also you can go to our documentary, Rudy Rudiger the Walk-On, on Amazon. and also on Broadway. We did our Broadway show, Dream Big on Broadway, Rudy Rüdiger.
Whoa, stop that. I hadn't heard about that. You got the musical Rudy?
Oh, it's awesome.
A musical.
Yeah, Coach. We have also, Rudy in concert. You haven't heard
of
that?
Oh, no.
Oh,
man.
That's even bigger.
Oh, we got to get that.
We got an 80-piece orchestra.
The pyrotechnics is amazing.
Yeah, 80-piece orchestra with a choir, and we score the movie as people watch the movie.
Okay.
We sell out every time.
You got everything,
yeah,
Rudy.
Those are great.
Rudy, and you travel all over the country. Is there a sandwich named Rudy somewhere?
No, there's a hamburger named Rudy.
Hamburger.
There we go.
At a restaurant called Walk-On's.
Where's that at?
In Louisiana, Texas.
You're everywhere, man.
We're going to have a cheese, right?
That's right.
We're going to have a cheese.
Yeah, that restaurant better be putting your cheese on their burgers over there and stuff, too. All right. Well, everybody, if you're out and about, get over to the bookstore today, and then go give me the website again for everybody.
Rudy Rüdiger. It's RudyInternational.com or R45.com.
All right. Thank you for taking the time
there.
We're going to get you a golf cart here. And
we got it
right
there. Our man's right there.
Oh, he's
the man.
Put a cover on there for you.
He's the man. All right, guys.
That's
thanks.
A limousine.
Yeah. Thanks. Nice meeting you. Hey, Rudy. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rudy.
We'll be right back talking Notre Dame football on Sports Radio 960 WSBT, streaming at WSBTRadio.com or through the WSBT Radio app. I just have so much fun picking music out. And I gave Matt three different songs, rainy songs for today. So I mostly stay in the 70s and 80s, but I had to bring one out of the fairly new. So Rihanna singing the umbrella.
Getting a lot of mileage out of the rain today.
There we are.
I say that.
We are. Hey, what do you got for us, Jim?
Legacy Heating and Air Game Day brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air, a Cook family business. Also by Centier Bank, Indiana's largest private family-owned bank. South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Learn more at feedindiana.org. And Sherwood Tire, your one stop for complete auto care at the corner of US 30 and Oak Road in Plymouth.
We got a few minutes here before we close out the second hour and stuff. Let's talk about sports movies while they're on that. Because I'm more of a Rocky III with Mr. T than Rocky II, but at least in Rocky II, he won it outright.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but, I mean, let's see. I'm good on Rocky, the first Rocky movie, obviously. Yeah. I mean, that's
right.
An amazing
brought
movie.
It to us every.
Two, three is good. Four kind of starts falling off,
off the
tracks a little bit.
I did like one of them that they did just about 10 years ago when he was a fighter and went to Vegas. I thought that wasn't bad. Rocky Balboa, I think it was called.
Yeah, the reboot of the Rocky series, or, you know, like the modernization of it, you know, with Creed and whatnot, with Creed's son. I've really enjoyed that, too. Yeah. I think it's been really well done.
It is. And there's one more getting ready to come out, actually, too, and stuff. But do you you remember watching Rudy when it came out? I mean, your first time? I'm a little older than you, but
maybe not when it first came. The first time I saw it, it was on video.
Okay.
So we had I was actually in marching band.
To learn it to play it?
No, didn't have to learn to play it. I did okay as far as playing went, but you know, like just one of those movies, you know, that, you know, where it was, you know, the theme just, you know, carried through everything.
Right.
So,
well, I'm trying to think how old some of my kids were. I think I watched it with them or whatever. I spent a lot of time at Notre Dame over the years.
Oh, sure.
Walking around the lakes and doing everything. And, yeah, that thing, you're just like you're going by. I still think of it when I go by. The one bench even over there has a marker on or a plate on it about that's where he opened his letter that he finally got accepted.
Yeah, that's I've gone around too, you know, just with everything that's in the movie, you know, even all those years ago, you know, when I first saw it, it was like, oh, that's that. Okay.
Yeah.
You know.
We actually had Sean Astin on the show at Ivy Court probably, I don't know, 15 years ago or whatever. My daughter's got autographs and everything. He drew one of the biggest crowds we ever had. Ivy Court, we had to move inside because it was like 29 degrees outside or whatever. And it was just packed inside. Hey, I got this, and it's about a year or two old, I think, but it's the top 25 players all time for Notre Dame. And I haven't done this before, but I'm going to look at this and tell you the names, and I'm going to check off how many that I know have been on Game Day over the years.
Okay.
First, we got Angelo Bartali on over at the Ramada Inn years ago, and then at Ivy Court. Ross Browner, numerous times. Johnny Lattner was on the show, met him. Tim Brown, been on the show a couple times. He's about due to come back. Man, we haven't had him for quite a while. Paul Horning, oh my God. I could tell you a story about that with him and my daughter talking to him, not knowing who it was, and he spent a half hour with her at breakfast. He had no idea. George Connor, he's been on the show back at the Ramada Inn. Luther Bradley's been on numerous times. Hopefully he's going to be on yet one of the this year. Jim Lynch, number 12 ranked, was not on. Alan Page was on about 2 years ago. Justice Alan Page. Frank Caradero, I don't remember him. Creighton Miller, I'd absolutely remember him. Jalen Smith, I need to find a connection for him because I've always wanted to get him on.
He has been a little busy. He's playing with the Giants now.
Yeah, so, I know, and doing a great job there.
Yeah.
Rocket, been on the show. Tom Clements, quarterback coach up in Green Bay right now, so he's always still.
He's a little busy.
Can't get him. Chris Zorch, of course, was just on a couple weeks ago. Aaron Taylor was on, I think, our first show of this year. It was on last year. Nick Bonacani was not. Ken McAfee was not. Bill Moose Fisher was. And Todd Light, was he on game day? No, I don't think Todd was ever on. And Lewis Red Salmon was not on. So, man, one.
You've done okay.
Sorry, I did the wrong way. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Almost half of the top 25 players in Notre Dame have been on this show over the years and stuff, too.
This little bit of name-dropping brought to you by.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I love it. I love it when our guests, and we'll see just after 3 o'clock here what our next guest, see what kind of name-dropper he does and everything. But right now, we're going to go back and hit the sponsors that make this possible. We'll be right back on Sports Radio 960 WS. This is another rainy song for you.
Ah, okay.
I can't even think of her name now all of a sudden.
Annie Lennox,
and the group was?
The Eurythmics, right?
Eurythmics. I had it there, but I just couldn't get it out. The rain has stopped, and I dare say it actually seems a little brighter out here, too, right now. They're telling me
don't
not to jinx.
Don't jinx it.
Oh, my goodness gracious. We got superstitious people all over the place today. Anyway, we're down here at Eddy Street Commons and Kite Realty Group. We appreciate them having us out here this season. It is so nice to get back outside after spending two seasons inside due to COVID. But they're great. They've got a fantastic set of stores here. You name it, you can find it. I always tell people, I always feel, and I'm born and raised in South Bend, when I come down Eddy Street Commons, it's like coming into a whole new city and stuff. We're across from Five Guys. Our tent has stayed in place. Jim hasn't flown out anywhere, too?
I don't think that's going to be a problem. I don't think that'll be an issue. No.
I actually feel like the wind died down a little bit.
Shut up.
There we go again.
Okay.
All right. Hey, we'll be right back after a short break for the second hour of the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show. Joining us will be former running back from the early 1970s. That would be Bill Gallagher. And former Notre Dame defensive back and then went on to be offensive coordinator for the Fighting Irish, Mike Haywood. You know, I was going to give a weather report in the second hour. I'm not even going to do that because you guys will shush me up anyway. And we'll have an outlook on today's game from some of the fans. And stay right where you are on the home for Fighting Irish Football, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Welcome back to the second hour of the Legacy Heating Air Game Day Show. I'm Tim Grau, along with Jim Ariseri. Matt Embry is producing back in the WSBT studios. We're so glad you're taking the time of your little time of your day to listen. We're still out here at Eddy Street Commons across from Five Guys. The rain has quit. I didn't jinx us. I did say wind was calming down. I did jinx us for that one.
But now all we got to do is just convince people to stand next to the tent, and then the wind kind of kicks up a little bit and it just spritzes them.
Yeah.
So
that's okay. Account executive Brian Miller is holding the tent up for us and stuff, too. Hey, we're only four hours away from kickoff right here on WSBT. Stay right with us because immediately following game day at 4 p.m. will be the game day sports brief powered by Michelob Ultra. And that leads into the network pregame show, then kickoff just after 7:30 p.m. And your coverage is not over when the game ends. After the game, join our own Jim Ariseri and Reggie Brooks for a review of the game, plus all the stats and the interviews on the official Notre Dame post-game show, all here on WSBT Sports Radio 960, also WSBT Radio Sports app, and streaming at WSBTRadio.com. Our next guest, he's already filling me with all sorts of stories and stuff, and we're going to have him tell a bunch of those. And one of them, because I was asking him, my research said he had two different positions, and there's quite a story behind that. We're going to have to build to that because we're going to start at the beginning and move up to that. But former defensive back, running back, and former offensive coordinator under Charlie Weiss, that would be Mike Haywood. Mike, thanks for stopping in today.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
So, you came from Houston, and Jim and I always love to hear when people come from warm climates. Why up here, or why Notre Dame versus the other schools that were recruiting you?
Well, it was really interesting because I had told Coach Bullock that I wasn't coming.
Coach Brian Bullock. There you go. Okay.
And I told Coach Brian Bullock that I wasn't coming and that I was either going to stay in the state of Texas and go to Houston or go to Texas. And my father and my mother told me, no, you're going to Notre Dame.
And that pretty much settled that argument, really.
That was it. So Coach Bullock, he actually came down. And what position were you playing in high school?
I was playing safety, corner, and wide receiver in high school.
Man, you got that team all covered, didn't you?
Yeah, so it was, you know, we were pretty good. We ended up winning state that year, my senior year, so It was a lot of fun.
Did you take a trip up to Notre Dame?
I took a trip up to Notre Dame February 5th of 1982.
And what was the weather like on that day?
There's about 5 feet of snow on the ground. And I remember walking with Joe Howard Johnson, and he said, the hawk is out. I said, where is the hawk?
So that didn't you didn't call back and say, Mom and Dad, I know you want me to go here, but, you know, the weather is just – have you ever been up here, Mom, Dad?
That's my favorite term for the weather, too.
Yeah,
the
I know.
Hawk.
I love that.
But, no, I didn't call back and tell him. But I did go home after my first week here in camp.
Okay.
Wow.
And I went home and stayed home for 2 weeks because I was homesick. I had never really been away from home. And I went back home, and I stayed there for 2 weeks. And I came back, and when I came back – I was running scout team for about 2 weeks, and then we used to have those JV games.
Right. Mm-hmm. They did back then.
And we went over to Purdue to play a JV game, and three or four coaches came up at halftime of the game, and we're just sitting there in the locker room, and Coach Boo comes over and said, you don't have any catches. I said, no, sir. He said, are you open? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, why don't you have any catches? I said, he's throwing it to his friend. He said, what? I said, yeah, he's throwing it to his friend. It's his roommate. He's throwing it to his roommate. He says, well, all right, we're going to see if you open because the first two passes are coming to you. 80-yard touchdown, 80-yard touchdown. He took me out and said, you're done.
So you were a receiver for that for the junior varsity team.
And then I went up to varsity the next week. And then I started the last six games of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. As what? What
as position? A wide receiver.
Wide receiver then. All right, so let's go. The career goes on to the next few years. Walk me through those dynamics that you were telling me about.
The next few years, I was playing wide receiver, and I really didn't like wide receiver. But we were playing with a lot of good guys. And at the end of the season, I asked Coach Fouts. I said, Coach, I said, at heart, I'm really a DB. I said, can I try out for DB? And he said, well, I tell you what, you put on 15 pounds, you put on 35 to 40 pounds in your bench, you put on 35 to 40 pounds, gave me all these stipulations. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go home. I went to Virginia, and I was in Virginia, and I worked for a law firm called Piper and Marbury Lawberry on 888 16th Street. And I worked out with Alan Pinkett 4 days a week.
Wow.
And I put on about 20 pounds because I was only 155 pounds. So I went up to 175. I went up to bench to 350 in my bench. I was at 550 in my squat. And he says, all right, we'll see. We'll try you a DB. And I played in the first game, played in the second game versus Michigan State, and then started the rest of my career at corner.
I think you told me you had a pretty fast time there, too, that you showed the coaches what you could do.
Oh, when I was a freshman, I came in as a DB, but I got moved to wide receiver really quick because I ran 4.41 in high-top tennis shoes untied.
Man.
And so I got moved from DB to wideout.
Did they come flying off when you were running that? Or,
no.
Wow, okay.
I still don't tie them. These shoes aren't tied that I have on today.
This is the Legacy Heating Air Game Day show on Sports Radio 960 WSBT with former Notre Dame player, since he played a lot of positions, and eventually offensive coordinator Mike Haywood. So let's stay with your college years then, stuff. So why was Allen with you and went to Virginia?
Well, Allen and I came in the same class in 1982.
Okay.
And when we had short breaks like Easter break and, you know, a four-day weekend, mm-hmm. we would jump in his little car. He had a little bit of yellow lemon. We were jumping. It only would fit four. And so we're jumping in. We squeeze into that little lemon. And we go to Sterling Park, Virginia, and spend our time there. And the reason I decided to go there for the summer was because Allen, pound for pound, was the strongest person on our football team. Mm-hmm. And so
you wonder
if anybody was going to help you bulk up, yeah. It was definitely going to be him.
If anybody was going to help me, and Mrs. Pinkett, and God bless her, because she passed away a little bit over a year ago. But she would cook dinner for us every day. We had some friends up there, Walter Connolly, who's passed away. He was a lawyer there. He would have us over for dinner 2-3 days a week, where he was cooking steak every night to put weight on it. it was a really good experience, and a lifelong experience with lifelong friends.
Seems like every Notre Dame player has got a rivalry that means more to them than maybe it does to somebody else. But USC is always a big rivalry. Who else for you?
USC and LSU.
LSU.
LSU was big rivalries.
Down in the, what did they call that back then? Down in the bayou, in the pit or something like that?
Down in the bayou.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I was fortunate enough to coach at LSU for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And we went to LSU, I think it was 1984. I think it was 84 we went to LSU. They were number 5 in the country. Dalton Hill was at tailback, Craig James, and those guys. And we ended up winning the game. And the reason that we won the game, and I'll tell you how important coaching is and how being able to make midstream adjustments, they came out and ran no huddle in the beginning of the game. We had guys in the locker room that were just done.
Gassed. Yeah.
They were done.
Yeah.
Because it was so hot. It was 98, 99
yeah.
degrees.
Yeah. The humidity. Yeah.
Because we're only 1 mile from the Mississippi River.
Right.
Guys were done. Guys in the South were like, what's going on? Because
hey, we're just getting started. Yeah.
This is what we practiced in all summer, worked out in all summer, but guys were done. And LSU came back out and went to a huddle. And when they went to a huddle, it gave us time on defense to gather ourselves,
just to
get
catch
our
your breath
back.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we are flying around that field, making plays. And the next thing you know, we're victorious, and we're flying back to South Bend with a victory.
You've been a coach, obviously, for a long, at other colleges too, and at Notre Dame. That happens often. Teams do something, and then they go away from it. As a coach, why does that happen? So frustrating.
You see it because coaches outthink themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're always trying to do something different than what somebody else mm-hmm. has done. And my philosophy is just keep doing what you're doing. And I learned this from a high school coach who I ended up coaching with at LSU. He's a pastor by the name of Jerry Baldwin. He had a tailback that was the number one tailback in the country, and they were playing in the state championship. Reporter came down and asked him, well, we'll call him Johnny. He said, well, what are you going to do to get Johnny the ball? He said, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to hand it to him. He said, well, what are you going to do when they start, because their game plan is going to stop the Johnny? I'm going to turn around and I'm going to toss it to him. He said, well, what else are you going to do different? He says, I'm going to throw a flare pass to him. I'm going to throw a check down to him. I'm going to throw the ball in the flat to him. And I'm going to keep doing what I've done to get here, and they're going to have to stop Johnny.
Yep. Right.
And I don't think they're going to stop Johnny.
Yeah.
And so they went on to win the state championship.
There you go.
Wow.
So just keep doing what you've always done.
Does any particular game stand out other than from that LSU?
Well,
you played service academies, correct, when you were there?
Yeah, and I coached at West Point.
Okay. Those teams never quit, no matter what the score.
They don't ever quit. They have great heart. The quarterback at Army, when we played against them, Jim Young was the head coach. Torrey Crawford was the running back. I mean, was the quarterback, and they were running the option. and Torrey Crawford was from Westbury High School in Houston, Texas. So I think he was about 2 years behind me. So he comes up to me before the game and he introduces himself and he says, "We have a lot of mutual friends." And he said, "I played a little league football with a lot of your friends." And I said, "Yeah, they called me up and told me about you." I said, "I really look forward to playing you." So I run back over to the huddle and Steve Lawrence says, "What did that dude say?" I say, "Oh, he's the starting quarterback and he came over to introduce himself, but he's going to have a bad day." So Corey always tells this story about how he was running the option and coming down the line running the option. He ducked in and I took the bait and then he goes to run outside and I punched him underneath his chin strap and knocked him down. Jeez. And didn't get the 15-yard penalty. And every time we're out somewhere
right.
in yeah. Houston, Corey always tells that story to people. He said, "Hey, man, this dude punched me in the jaw and didn't get 15 yards on it."
Oh, jeez, Al.
But when I went to West Point to interview for the job, Jim Young showed that tape.
Really?
And he said, "Can you get our DBs to play with the same intensity in which you play with at Notre Dame?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yes, sir." And I got the job before I walked out the door.
Wow.
Yeah.
So take us in that transition. When did you know you want to be a coach?
I didn't, but I got hurt my senior year, my fifth year actually with Coach Oates. And Coach Oates used to do this visualization. You remember hearing about the visualization?
Sure. Yes.
Where you land underneath the table, mm-hmm. you visualize different things, you land down, let your arms sink into the cloud, the whole deal. And so we go into this visualization of the future. And he says, "Imagine that you're walking out of your house. You get into your car. You back up. You're taking off. Stop. Look over your shoulder and see what you're looking at." And I was looking at a house. He said, "Remember that house, and now let's proceed forward to work."
Hmm.
"Now you're at work. What are you doing?" I was standing behind a desk with a red t-shirt on, a whistle around my neck, and a pair of shorts. And I'm like, "What is this?"
Yeah.
And then I go out and I'm on a field. And then he brings us back to another stage where we start visualizing different plays in the game. And so afterwards, we were talking, and it was Rob Banks, Steve Lawrence, A.J. Alonzo Jefferson, myself, and we were talking about the different things in which we visualize. And they said, "What are you doing visualizing that?" He said, "You're going to the league." I said, "I don't know." I got hurt in that game and never played another down.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was the Alabama
Jeez.
Game.
Uh-huh.
I got injured and never played again. And so
the visualization was...
It was accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was just really interesting how we were walking into Notre Dame versus Texas A&M at the Cotton Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop Harris, who had coached here, whose son had played here, he was coaching in Minnesota. He says, what are you going to do? I said, "I'm going to go back to Notre Dame. I'm going to finish my master's, and then I'm going to go to law school." He says, "Well, I got something for you." I said, "What's that?" He said, "I want you to come be a GA for me at Minnesota." I said, "Coach," I said, "I don't know." I said, "I think I need to go back and finish my master's and then go to law school." He says, "No, you need to be a coach. Just come try it and see if you like it." So I talked it over with my mom and dad, and they were like, "What's a year?
Mm-hmm.
Go try it and see.
See what happens."
I was there 11 months. I got called in by John Gutekis, whose son is, I think, the general manager of Green Bay Packers now.
Okay.
So he called me in, and he said, "What are you going to do? Are you going to stay to next year, or are you going to go back and go to school at Notre Dame?" And I said, "Coach, this is the best time that I've ever had working in my life. I've really enjoyed it." I said, "However, I really don't know, and I haven't made a decision yet." He said, "Well, you have all the time in which you need, but I want you to understand something. Only about 10% of the people get to do what they like to do in life and have fun doing it. The rest of the 90% of the people are trying to find their way to find something that they like doing." 2 days later, I get a call from West Point, Jim Young, asked me to come interview to coach on his coaching staff and work with his DBs. And the rest was history.
Timing is everything, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. So you end up, had a number of coaching stops, and then ended up at Notre Dame. Did you see that when you started your coaching, that that was something you wanted to do?
No, because I turned down 1995, Lou Holtz called me up, and I was in Memphis Airport. And he had Miss Jane search me down, who was his administrative assistant.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So Miss Jane, I get summoned in the airport, and I'm like, who is calling me in the middle of the airport? So I go to the phone. I pick up the phone.
That soothing airport voice.
Yeah.
And Mark Haywood, please pick up a courtesy phone.
Right.
What?
And it's Miss Jane. I said, Miss Jane, what are you doing searching me down in the airport? She says, Coach Host wants to talk to you. I said, all right. The year before, he had talked to me about a job, and then he hired somebody else. And I was like, hey, that's fine. That was 94. And so he says, I want to call you up and offer you the outside linebacker job here at the University of Notre Dame. I say, Coach, I'm on my way to LSU, and I've already accepted the job. And the things in which you've told me about a job is that when you take a job, you need to stay 2 years, so I'm not going to be able to take this job. I say, but I appreciate the offer, and thank you very much.
And he appreciated that, right?
Yeah, okay. He was good with that. Then in 1997, Bob Davey called, and he offered me the running back job in 1997. And then I was the running back coach, special team coordinator at LSU, and close to home. So I said, Coach, I appreciate it. I got a pass. Mm-hmm. And then who else? I think it was 2004. I was at Texas. And then I got offered the DB job. But now I was a run game coordinator at Texas, special team coordinator, and recruiting coordinator.
Your plate's full there.
Man.
And then I got offered the running back job at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. No, it was the DB job. I got offered the DB job at Notre Dame. And I said, Coach Willingham, I'm going to have to pass. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm having a good career on offense, and I'm
sure
going to stay on offense.
Right.
And I thank you very much for the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Then the next year, Charlie Weiss called, 2005. I turned down Charlie two times.
He's persistent.
And then he called back a third time, and I just got off the phone with Kevin Falk, mm-hmm. who played for me at LSU mm-hmm. and played 13 years with New England Patriots.
Yeah.
And Kevin was telling me, you need to go take the job. You should take the job. You can learn a lot more about the passing game under Charlie Weiss. Mm-hmm. And so I was standing in the driveway of my parents' house, and I said, all right, Coach. I said, I'll take the job. And so, and it was a great experience. I love C-Dub. You know, C-Dub has a different vernacular than may not be accepted here at Notre Dame.
Right,
but, sure.
But I love C-Dub because he was real. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not like his delivery, but he was really, to me, he was a really good person to me. You know, and I really appreciated it. I liked working for him, and I learned a lot working for him, and especially in protections and throwing the ball.
That's one thing that you kind of pick up as time goes on with those with the Parcells tree, you know, mm-hmm. Because you know Charlie Weiss coached under Parcells
right,
for
right,
a
yeah.
little bit stretch too, and like all those guys, you hear that especially, you know, mm-hmm. treated me well, you know, learned a lot, all that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Yeah. Typically it's you know, God, what a tyrant, you know. So
but, you know, C-Dub would walk by my office and certain vernacular would come out. And I just keep working.
Sure.
30 minutes later, he come back by the office. Then he sit down. He said, two creams and four sugars just like you like it. And he sit there and talk for 30 minutes. And then I say, C-Dub, I got work to do. You don't have anything to do today. You just walking around being a comedian. But I got work to do. You know, and yeah, you know, I enjoy him. I still enjoy him when I talk to him. I talk to him about twice a month.
Do you really?
Oh yeah. And you know, he is comical to me.
Yeah.
Certain people don't think it's comical, but yeah.
How's he doing, by the way?
He's doing well. A little bored, but he's doing all right.
Sure.
He's doing NFL radio.
Okay.
And
all right.
Doing some things on the radio, and he's always analyzing games and stuff.
Tim Growl, Jim Arizari. We're with Mike Haywood on Legacy Heating Air Game Day show. Let's kind of move forward to where we're at nowadays and stuff. Well, let's first go. What's the toughest thing about being the offensive coordinator?
Are we talking about? Depends on who you're working with.
Well, okay. I just want to get your background, and then I want you to kind of talk. Tommy Rees has been taking a lot of hits, and I think offensive coordinators take a lot of hits at all schools.
Well, let's say this. Where we made a mistake is that, and when I say we, and I'm going to say myself, well, I made a mistake is that what we did with BQ, we thought Clawson could do the same thing. And he could not do the
wrong
same thing.
Wrong assumption, right?
Wrong, yeah. Totally wrong assumption. Yeah. Because when you sit there and analyze tape, you're like, this is what works against them. This is what works against them. This is what works against them. All right. We put it into the certain formations that we're going to be plus one, have the advantage, or where we can attack him coverage-wise. And then we say, all right, throw it down. We run it. But here's a prime example. We're playing North Carolina. We lose to North Carolina. But we're going at halftime, and we're up. And we come back out, and I think we're inside the 20-yard line. And C-Dub says, hey, give me a quick pass. So I said, all right, let's go with a simple one. We're going to go with a slant to the field. We go with a hitch to the boundary. If it's a post safety, we throw the ball into the boundary. If it's split safety, we throw it to the field. I said, so he has a way out. No matter what he does, he has a way out. It's post safety. I mean, it's split safety. He throws it to the boundary to the hitch. It's picked off going into the end zone for a touchdown. Now, that was too complicated for him. And so when I look at games today, you know, we are doing things that attacks the opponent, but it ain't necessarily sure what that kid behind that quarterback can do. Right. That quarterback can do.
Right.
It's not necessarily sure what Payne can do. And so when we run the football, it takes a whole lot of stress off the quarterback.
Right.
So if you can get the run game going, then come back with your play action, your three steps, your boots, your naked, getting the ball to the tight end, getting the ball to Thomas, all right, but pounding them with Diggins and how do you pronounce it?
Estime.
All right. And basically, we're running some simple things. We're running quick hitting dives up in there. You find the hole, you hit the crease, all right?
Really simple.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Create the hole, run through the hole.
Right. And so, in those type, Estime is that type of back. That he can hit the hole, they can't take him down, he bounces off of a tackle, he hits the cream off tackle, boom, he's off and running.
He can kind of make his own hole, too.
Right, that's for sure.
So, you know, do the things that you're having success at. Don't necessarily do the things that works well against the opponent, because the quarterback may not be able to handle what's working well against the opponent. And it comes from life lessons, you know, because when I left here and went to Miami, I go into the defensive room, special team room, offense coordinator's room, and they say, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And I'm like, no, we're not. I said, I've lived this life once before. I said, we're going to do what the kids can do and what we're going to have success at. And offensively, we will always start off by running the ball and being physical. And, you know, we had some success there doing those things.
As we get ready to let you go, how are you when you're watching the game, whether in the stadium or by TV? Are you dissecting the offense, or can you really sit and enjoy the game?
No, I don't sit and enjoy any game. and so a lot of times.
Thank you for being so honestly blunt about it.
I don't sit and enjoy it, because I'm sitting up and, like, I get phone calls during the week, and I get film sent to me, and I said, all right, here's this right here. And so I sent some tape 2 weeks ago. I got some tape, and I wrote up about five or six plays, and I sent it to him. And we're watching it on television, and my son says, Dad, that's the play that you drew up. And so I said, yeah, I said, that's the play. He said, Dad, the back is wide open. I said, I told you the back was going to be wide open, because they can't cover him in that defense.
See, you still got it, man.
No. I enjoy sitting down, you know, And we were talking today because, you know, I told you how I gave the tickets away instead of going to the game today, and we're all going to Pinkett's house. And so we're gonna have a little function at Pinkett's house with a bunch of former Notre Dame players.
Oh, wow.
And we were just sitting up there talking, and Pinkett's like, are we going to run the football today? I said, I know what. If we're not running the football, I'm going to turn it to the Astros game.
Oh, there you go.
World Series game, yeah.
That's great. Hey, Mike, it's been enjoyable. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Alan hi up there, and tell him he needs to ask all those other players that are up there, have you ever been on Game Day show? Because we want to get some of them down here, too.
All right, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank
for the
you.
Yeah.
You take all care
have
of yourself.
A great day.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, we'll be back on Sports Radio 960 W. All right. I haven't been pressing it too much during the show, but we're going to be a hungry animal tonight, and we are going to upset Clemson.
Harumph.
Take it and book it, Dano. This is a Legacy Heat and Air Game Day show on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We are still down with the Wizard of Oz blowing winds right across from five guys.
Tell me about it.
I'm still waiting for that bicycle with the witch to go by, but it hasn't. Or a cow flying by. In any case, we're back here.
We got cows.
Yes. We're having a great time. Show goes fast. Not too much left. We got a couple sponsors we want to highlight.
Of course, Legacy Heating and Air Game Day brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air, a Cook family business. Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. Pet Refuge, urging you to adopt Don't Shop, where new beginnings have happy endings. And Tim Growl State Farm Insurance. For amazingly great rates on auto, home, and life insurance, call Tim at 574-232-9981. But he's a little busy now.
Yeah, he is. Just a little bit right at the moment. So our next guest played for the Fighting Irish, running back position in the early 70s, and he went on to coaching with Pat Steenberg, one of our favorites, comes on about every year with Global Football. So we're going to get some stories about playing overseas and stuff too. But my biggest question is, in 1971 for Bill Gallagher, you were 0-for-1 in pass attempts. Do you remember what happened there?
Beautiful tight spiral right to him, and he just dropped it.
I love it.
Of course.
I love it. I love it.
So that was left-handed.
That was kind of a for error, who was kind of somewhat conservative. That was to have that play in there. Was that a Tom Pagna play called?
I don't know who it was, but I mean, I know I threw it a couple times in practice. They would have Goulias or maybe Larry Parker or somebody throwing the ball when he goes to the right for a right-hander, but they needed a left-hander to throw it over here. So,
and you only practice it twice, and then they call it. So what was that like?
You didn't have to practice it. It was right there.
So when that huddle was called, you were just like, all right, that's the play that's going. Here we go.
I believe I actually went in with the play.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Say, hey, coach, you know, do you want that pass play one of these downs, you know? He said, sure. Oh.
So you – back in those days, we were talking earlier with, my goodness, the name for our first guest was talking about running backs and everything.
Bob Morton.
Oh, Bob Morton. So you had, back in that day, what was called left halfback, right halfbacks, and actually something that was called a fullback back in those days.
Correct.
Correct?
Yep.
And you, did you play distinctly one, or did Aaron, do you guys have to know all three positions? Or not the fullback, probably, but at least the left or the right halfback?
No, it was basically halfbacks and fullbacks.
Okay.
Although I was fortunate enough to be put in the fullback line and practice a lot to block.
Okay.
Because I knew that was going to help me, because we ran some off-tackle plays where you're kicking out the end and the back is. So I wanted to improve my blocking, so I went with the big guys.
So, like, a lot of these players nowadays, if you're talking to them, they go left halfback, right halfback. What is that? Right?
Yeah. It was always a tailback or something, you know.
Well, and Bob Morton, that's who Jim was telling me, reminded me who was on. He was talking about how teams, the I formation would be really good for Notre Dame right now. He'd like to see their two backs, you know, Diggs and Estime, both in I. Nobody runs the, unfortunately anymore, runs the I formation anymore, right?
No, a lot of times what they'll do is that instead of leading with the fullback, they think that if we flank the fullback out, that they'll take a linebacker out or move over with them, at least to the tight end or something, and therefore you have blocked him by taking him out of the way.
Gotcha. A lot of former, we've had a lot of former era players on, and they would always refer to how tough the practices were, that the games were like so much easier. Do you concur with that philosophy?
No.
No?
No. I really enjoyed practice. I didn't think it was hard. I worked hard. I thought, I don't think it wasn't because I wasn't working hard, but I really enjoyed the game of football, and I enjoyed playing and practicing. And when you enjoy it more, the practice doesn't seem like work, you know?
So how were you recruited to Notre Dame? Who would have been that one that came to your home?
Coach Joe Yonto. He came in and sat down on the sofa.
And what town were you in? Where?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Pennsylvania's a great Notre Dame haven for players.
Yeah. So coach came in, sat down on the sofa, and my mom is like, she sees the blue and the gold and whatever, the Notre Dame stuff. Although my mom did the same thing. She happened to be there when the West Point coach came also, and the cadet, with all his stripes and stuff.
Oh, wow, yes.
Impressed her too, but Coach Yonto impressed her also.
So how was that decision made then with your mom and dad to come to Notre Dame?
I think that in the beginning of my senior year, I thought I would go to Notre Dame. I was hoping I would be able to play well enough to go to Notre Dame. And if I did play well enough, I figured I'd go to Notre Dame. But Michigan was awful nice. But yeah, that was pretty good too. That was a second choice. Here's a story for you. So I'm in the in-state Philadelphia, in-state Pennsylvania, and I got Notre Dame and Michigan and Boston College and whatever, a couple other places. But I never heard a word from Penn State.
The Nittany Lions weren't contacting you.
In-house player.
Right.
And never heard a word. And then I found out there's two reasons. Franco Harris and Lydell Mitchell.
That's right. They played together, didn't they?
Franco, Lydell, Bill Gallagher. One of them's out. Okay.
So Tom Pagan, I knew him pretty well. And his daughter and I actually went to high school together and stuff. So what would if you want to talk about Tom a little bit and the type of coach, type of man he was, what would be the words you would be using for him?
I would say he was demanding, but in a very sensible way. Like, he wasn't demanding. He wasn't a holler and a screamer. I mean, he would, get his voice up, whatever, once in a while,
Right.
But he wasn't like a pull-your-hair-out type of coach. He was a demanding coach that needed perfection from, the backfield with the mesh points and all that stuff, but also in blocking. So I can remember a lot of times that we'd be taken over to the defensive end and meet up with the defensive end on the practice field and kick the defensive end out. So the first time I was up, I looked over, and there's Walt Podolsky.
Oh, my goodness. Soon to be All-American, right?
Yeah, yep. So, we're doing that, blocking guys like him and Bobby Neidert on the other side, whatever. So the blocking was very important there, too. We didn't do so much ISOs. It was more like kicking out off tackle plays. But he was good with that and good with explaining the plays and the steps, the footwork that you would need to get to your maximum of the play. I remember him. He was just a really nice guy. I really enjoyed playing for him.
Jim and Tim on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We're with Bill Gallagher. So, Bill, you played with a lot of named players. Frank Pomerico was on the show last week or whatever.
Yep.
John Dampier was on the show, the first
John,
or second show.
Yep. I golfed with John twice since we did. Just touching base,
Tom Gatewood? You played with Tom Gatewood too?
No, but I saw Tom. I guess it was an earlier game.
Okay.
It was a game last year, I guess. I ran into Tom.
So we all know about era coaching from the tower, and we've had more than one player tell us that they got called down from the tower. How about for you, from the voice of God, being era Parsegian?
Sure. At least once that I heard.
That you heard?
Other ones might have been, I had deaf ears on purpose or something. I don't know. I didn't need a power. It was hard enough trying to compete with all the talent that we had, in the backfield particularly.
Right.
But yeah, I heard a couple times say, "Hey, Gallagher, what the hell are you doing?" blocked the wrong guy, and that was one of my fortes, was blocking. you know. So,
hey, whatever it takes to get on the field, right?
Exactly, exactly.
So you developed quite a relationship with Pat Steenberg, one of the quarterback from Notre Dame, and Pat's president of Global Football. And for those that, I'll let you tell people for Global Football, as this gust of wind comes flying up here again.
Sure.
Bill, tell people about Global Football, because I know what it's about. You tell them.
Well, Patrick Steenberg, who was a quarterback on the team, a quarterback before or right after Theismann. I forget how many years out, but at an early age, he started the – I'm trying to get the wording correct on this, but it was a Notre Dame
camp.
Football camp. Fantasy, yeah,
fantasy
camp.
Fantasy camp.
Right. And so he started that right away. And that was
quite successful.
It was, I think, popular. He had it for 26 years or something. Mm-hmm. And then one of the head coaches, new head coaches, came in and said, "No, you're not doing this anymore." But I'll leave him. So then I met up with Patrick at a game, and he knew I was coaching back east. I was the head coach in high school when I was 21. And a head coach for, I don't know the total, but.
That was a quite young age to be a head coach, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Patrick started from there. He started an organization that he called Global Football. And the reason he started Global Football was. To unite the children of the world through American football. So what he does with that is, and I'm his head coach for the main team, is we'll take high school seniors from around the country and take them to foreign countries and play a team, experience the culture, tour, you know, and then play, show. We would do a clinic for the team, and then we would play a game. So, I mean, it's a great thing. And this was unbelievable.
Yeah, that emblem on there is really it's a classy thing. So, what countries did you get to go to?
Well, there's one, China.
China.
Do you believe that?
No, I don't. I forgot about that.
I mean, we're walking the freaking Great Wall of China.
Oh my goodness!
You know, one day.
And you got these 18-year-olds that just have. I mean, you're awed at your age as a coaches. Can you imagine what those boys were thinking?
Right.
And stuff, too?
Exactly.
So, but did you go other places too with it?
Well, we're all over Europe.
Yep.
All over Europe. It's a once a year trip that we do that we take.
So, are you still coaching?
Oh yeah.
Oh great.
Yep. And. Like I said, it's high school seniors. So, I mean, if there's a high school senior out there listening to this and he has any interest in doing that, all he's got to do is go to globalfootball.com. And our trip this year is Ireland.
He's going to go back to just before Notre Dame plays Navy next year?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And we did that once before, probably, I guess, when Notre Dame was – when's the last time Notre Dame was over there? Maybe it was twice before that.
But, yeah, 12 or 18, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because they do about every 4 or 5 years or 6 years, I think, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Notre Dame.
So was China just this year?
Pardon?
Was China just this year?
Oh, no.
What did you just complete this past year?
Oh, we didn't. We had COVID. So the trip's in March.
Okay.
So this March coming up is Ireland.
Okay.
No. Yeah, it is. It's Ireland. Mm-hmm. And then when the fall starts, that's when Ireland. So we have two trips, I'm sorry.
Do you really?
We do the high school senior one.
Okay.
And that's in March.
All right.
The end of March.
Then you're going down just in August, just before Notre Dame plays, aren't you?
And then we go to Ireland,
right
before then.
That's going to be quite a scene. Yeah, I've been wanting to take the show on the road to there, but just haven't been able to get it worked out. I need sponsors to do that. Hey, before we let you go, you have multiple generations of Bill Gallaghers at Notre Dame.
Yeah, it was great. I was trying to get Will the Third to get here at least anyway, but he was with all his boys. They had practice today too, lacrosse practice. But anyway, my name is William Andrew Gallagher. My son's name, who my son played football and lacrosse in high school for me.
Mm-hmm.
Played football for me.
Wow.
He is William Andrew Gallagher Jr. And he came to Notre Dame. He was captain of the lacrosse team. So now his son, Will, who just had practice this morning, he's here, and he is William Andrew Gallagher the third.
Wow.
So, I'm pretty proud of that.
I bet you are. That
we got all three. And we got a picture with. I got one. You know, up and uh-huh. My son's got two, and then we're in that
three Billy Gallagher's at Notre Dame. And didn't you have a daughter that attended?
Daughter-in-law.
Okay.
Who married my son, Bill,
uh-huh.
The older one.
She attended Notre Dame also?
Yes. Yep.
Well, Notre Dame means a lot to your family.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, nowadays, you know, even more important than the legacies and things to most parents mm-hmm. is safety.
Right.
They need some place that they feel that you can send your kid. And he's going to have, he or she's going to have a great experience, but it's also a very safe environment that they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, that's not easy to have, really.
No, it's not.
People take it for granted too much, I think.
But, yeah. So you'll be watching a game. Do you go to the games?
Sure.
Okay. And how many games do you come in for?
This is the first year that we're looking. We may only have this one.
Okay.
We usually look for three.
All right. Got about a minute or two. Your thoughts on this year's Irish?
I think their identity, you know, it's hard for me to say because I don't think they know.
Mm-hmm.
And until they really find out, you know, that they what they want to be really good at, what they want to be known for, it's anybody's guess, like it's week to week, you know.
I was going to say, that's kind of tough if you still don't have your identity yet in the middle of the season.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, it can be, yes, but as long as you're good at the other things that you're trying out and doing and then successful with that before you transfer over completely to that, to a new system.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well, go Irish today. I don't know with this win what that's going to do, but we'll see what we'll see about 3 hours. It's going to be fun, right? All right, Bill Gallagher, we appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time. I know Pat sent you over to me, and couldn't be more grateful.
Okay, you're welcome.
Go Irish.
Glad to be here. Exactly, go Irish.
All right, we'll be right back on the Legacy Heat Gatorade Show on Sports Radio 960 WSBT, streaming at WSBTradio.com or through the WSBT. Woohoo! All right. Had to have a little peppy music to get things going here towards the, as we get ready to close out. How about some sponsors?
Legacy Heating and Air Game Day, powered by Legacy Heating and Air, a Cook family business. Also by Michelob Ultra, locally distributed by United Beverage Company. Michelob Ultra, the superior light beer with only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. The Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center, OSMC, providing orthopedic care to Michiana since 1973. Imperial Furniture in Dowagiac, where furniture shopping is fun. Lozier. Launch your career at Lozier. Apply today at lifeatlozier.com. Pella Windows. Replacing your windows and doors can be intimidating, but Pella makes it easy. And Hotel Elkhart. Welcome to an Elkhart original with hospitality reimagined. Your home on game day weekends.
If you're out and about, batting down the hatches, it is windy. We apologize for some of the wind sounds in there. Nothing we can do.
Yeah.
We want to be out here in the elements just like the fans of football. Here comes a guy walking in shorts. That might be a little... more
a little bit much.
Yeah.
A little daring today.
Right. But we want to thank Kite Realty, Tegan and all of her team at Kite Realty for having us out here and hosting. We appreciate their use of their golf cart to get Rudy back and forth here and everything they do to help us with the setup and stuff too. We're going to take a short break and then we'll be right back to close the hour of the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show. So give me the night. Give me the night. Give the Notre Dame team tonight, 7:30, NBC, home game. Number 4 Clemson takes on your Friday in Irish.
My advice is to sync up the radio with the TV.
That would be a good idea. I like that. I like that thought.
We've got the better play-by-play.
You are absolutely right about that. I tell you what, that win, it's like nothing, and then all of a sudden, it's just like going to take us
everything.
Away.
Yeah.
So anyway, if anybody hasn't left yet and is going to the game, right now it still says it's 63 degrees right outside. We're just at the tail end on the radar of a little bit of rain. But by the end of the game, it's going to be 47 degrees. So you better be dressing in different layers and stuff so you're ready for that later on. And the wind, though, is not going to stop. According to the weather report, the wind's going to continue as high as gusts of 50 miles an hour. Now, I don't know what that's going to do in the stadium, but my guess is going to be an adventure for passing,
I'm guessing,
and punting,
a lot of,
and kicking.
I'm guessing a lot of two-point conversions and a lot of fourth down attempts.
You got that right. You got that right. Hey, Jim and I want to thank Matt Embry back at the studios for producing, and also to our engineer Bob Henning and our account executive and tent holder downer Brian Miller.
The human weight, Brian.
There you got it. We want to thank all of our guests that took the time out on this windy day. And also other busy weekend to stop by. They are the ones that make this so possible. But you, the listeners, are the one that each and every week decide to turn us on, and we can't be more happy. Don't go anywhere as WSBT's Notre Dame game coverage continues right after the break. It's details and X's and O's about today's matchup on Game Day Sports Beat, powered by Michelob Ultra. Immediately following Sports Beat, it's the Notre Dame Network pregame show. Then it's the kickoff just after 7:30 p.m. And after the game, make sure to join Jim and Reggie Brooks for the official Notre Dame post-game show.
Hoping for another fun one tonight.
We are. We like it when Reggie's in a good mood for you.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's get a win. If for no other reason, to give Jim a good night there.
That's
tonight.
That's right.
Hey, next Saturday, it's another breakfast show as Game Day will be there to start your Notre Dame football Saturday from 7 to 9 a.m. Oh, boy. And as your Fighting Irish take on the Midshipmen from Navy at noon. For Jim Arizari, this is Tim Growl. We hope you enjoyed today's show, and thank you for listening to the Legacy Heating Air Game Day Show on your home for Fighting Irish Football, Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT. Go Irish!